Here we are back, podcast number 21. Yep, there's been a pretty big delay in our podcast this time. It's been 2 weeks. This bear hunting, man, it's just killing me. Been trying to find a color phase bear over 6 foot. The winter doesn't want to go away, so I can't get where I want to. We just had the rock slide second, I guess, annual bear camp. There was no bears were harmed during the 2017 Rockslide Bear Camp, but we did kill 2 wolves, and I will always take wolves over bears because they're just damn hard to manage. We'll have a podcast on the wolf bear hunt with Justin Crosley and Jeff Brozovich in the next couple of weeks. I also want to tell everybody you can get 20% off at Mountain Ops using the code FATKID. So go to mountainops.com and use that code. We would appreciate it. I'm also pretty excited to announce that we're going to give away a Kefaru 14er. All you have to do is leave a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Podbean. We'll throw all the numbers in there and we'll tally them up from one to however many people leave a review. The odds are pretty good. I think I only have, if I count them all up right, I think I only have like 18 reviews at the moment. And I'm not telling you to leave a good review, a bad review, just leave a review. We'd appreciate it. So we'll probably give that away around podcast 25 or 26. You probably have a month, 6 weeks to get that review in, and we'd really appreciate it. This podcast is kind of the lost podcast. This was probably the second or third podcast that me and Tanya did. That is some great English. Anyways, it's with Aaron Snyder and it's on Hunting Partners, and I just came across it last week. So anyways, there is a bit of cussing, mostly from Tanya. So it's not G-rated, but we do cover some good discussion about Hunting Partners. So anyways, hope you enjoy it. Thanks.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Avery Adventures Podcast. I'm Tanya Avery, and this is my hunting partner and spouse, Ryan Avery.
Hello.
Today we have on Aaron Snyder from Kefaru and Gritty Bowman, and we were going to talk about Hunting Partners. We have just spent the last half hour making fun of each other and throwing a lot of crap around about hunting stories and such. So we figured we'd just roll into that topic. I've hunted with Ryan and Aaron, and then of course they've hunted with each other and then many other people. So we thought we'd touch a little bit on the qualities of a good hunting partner and just other random tangents that we throw in there because we're new at this. So we still kind of suck at it.
Well, hunting partners are like a marriage anyway, so no homo, but it is a lot of the same issues. You know, like if you go to remodel your house, you'll probably go through a divorce or at least threaten to do it by the end of it. It's not too much different with some hunting partners. If you got a good one or you got a good wife, it's a smooth flow. If there's some glitches on the edges or alpha male issues or whatever else, husband and wife or hunting partners, you can have the same issues. And I'm finding out as time goes on with hunting partners, sometimes even though the hunting partner may be great during the hunt, what happens after the hunt may be a problem. Meaning, you know, he saved your life and, you know, he's the smartest man alive, or maybe you're the smartest man alive or whatever. You know, it's after the fact.
That's the true. Stories that are told after the fact that you hear about later. Is that what you're referring to?
Right. I mean, Ryan and I talk shit about each other back and forth all the time, but we know it. But like, more or less, like, you know, you go on a hunt and I don't know what's a good example. You know, one guy gets misplaced and, you know, misplaced. Slightly misplaced. And then you get back and that, you know, the guy that didn't get misplaced but wasn't scared was too scared to navigate. Now he is the one that saved the day, and he told a guy that told another guy that told another guy. By the time it's all said and done, you know, Mr. Avery has no idea how to land nav because he strayed off course by a half a mile or a quarter mile or whatever. When, you know, you reverse the situation, the other guy couldn't even got you there, but now he's the master and commander of all land nav and everything holy.
Yeah, I've hunted with a few of those, but hunting with Tanya is probably the most challenging. I've probably hunted with, I don't know, 30, 40 different guys, but we can start off an argument about absolutely nothing. We can wake up and say, what do you want to eat before we go hunting? And we will start turning into a dog fight. It's pretty epic. But I love her.
That happens when we're at home too.
Yeah, but see, besides Tanya, I have probably talked to you more than any other person in the last 4 years, Aaron. And we don't get in fights.
No.
Me and Aaron rarely get in fights.
No. But
me and Tanya, we get in fights every day.
We've never gotten one hunting. Now, because of Rock Slide, which was a high stress environment, I think we got into one argument there.
Yep.
But hunting, I don't think we've ever even, I don't think I've ever got irritated.
Well, you don't live with him.
No,
perhaps
I don't.
If you lived with him and hunted with him, that may be a different situation.
The only problem I have hunting with Aaron is fucking getting him up in the morning.
I thought you were going to say about food.
No, food's fine. I always got to roust him out of bed. He's always laying around.
Right.
Truthfully, yeah. Aaron, the only thing that irritates me about Aaron is his damn headlamp, because he wakes up at like 2 in the morning. And he's walking around with that headlamp shining everybody's eyes for 3 or 4 hours. The great thing about hunting with fucking Aaron is he always has a fire going.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's always either a fire going, or I'll be the guy that'll, hey, let me run down and see if this path is clear, or I'll go wander around and see if I can find water. You know, all those things. There are some negative sides to having that energy, which is also I don't sleep, so I keep, as he said, everyone up. Which you got to experience firsthand as I'm up at 2 in the morning stoking the fire, looking around to see if anybody's going to wake up to talk to me.
Yeah, he'll definitely motivate you, because he'll start messing with your sleeping bag. He'll throw a chunk of bottle of red line at you. He'll get you going in the morning. The one thing that I notice with hunting partners, though, that it doesn't bother me, but I've hunted with a few guys that I won't talk for like 2 or 3 hours while we're glassing or whatever, and they think I'm mad at them, and really I just don't want to talk. I've never really ran into that issue with Aaron, but I've never had that problem with Tanya, because she talks all the time.
Usually you're the one that's chatty when we're glassing, actually, because I'll try to put my earphones in or something, and you'll be like, what are you doing? Why are you putting those in? And then you get all like offended.
Yeah, well, I think the biggest problem with that is she's told me everything she's going to tell me, but damn, she keeps on telling me.
It's because, well, I don't feel like he's heard it.
Yeah. And that, you know, going over like, you know, in your mind, you go through your collective, you know, your last 20 years or 10 years of hunting experience with hunting partners, you know, and you're going to think of guys, and we talked about this on the Gritty podcast, but you got the guys that don't show up or cancel. Or the guys in your case that never have anything ready. The guys that want to walk all day, eat wind bad or not or whatever. But, you know, it's funny as we all grow in the industry, which is happening. We're all getting, you know, Rock Slide's getting known, Avery Adventures, you grow. How it can change some people, and it can alter. In my case now, I don't really hunt hardly with too many people, because the backlash of a bad hunting partner, you know, of having a bad one, whether I was the bad one or someone else, you can find out later, like, you know, rumors are getting spread, not necessarily rumors that are like super detrimental, again, like the Land Nav podcast or the Land Nav issue. You know, next thing you know, you and I know a guy that lives in Washington that, basically, by the time I got done hunting with him, he had saved my life and taught me how to do everything in the world, and everything else known to man, and out hiked me and everything else. When the truth of the matter was, he is a great hunter. I crushed him hiking in. He had to nap the whole day. But the story I heard later from other people that he told was completely different, which, you know, they want to get to have a no name or whatever. Who knows what it is? It's just difficult to find. I get along well with John Pinch. John and I hunt really well together. And same as like you and I, no arguments whatsoever. But you run into other people. Who's the worst person you ever hunted with? You don't have to mention names, but an example of what happened.
Don't say me.
No.
Even if it's true.
The good thing about hunting with Tanya is she just started hunting 2 years ago. And pretty much what I tell her, she does, and she usually stays in my hip pocket, so it's not a bad idea. I think the worst person I ever hunted with was not necessarily the hunting part. It was once we shot something, the actual pack out was more of the issue of he wanted to do something that I didn't want to do, and we ended up going an extra 2 miles, and we never hunted again because basically me and you compromise. If I think your idea is better, yeah, we'll probably do it. And if you think my idea is better, we'll do it. But this particular individual, he didn't want to have any, there was no compromise. It was, he was going to do it his way and basically screw the other, there's three of us all together, screw the other two of us, because we wanted to go, basically it was a longer route, but it was a much flatter route. And he wanted to go straight up the hill, and it basically screwed us all. And we never hunted with that guy again. So it can't happen. That. Say again.
I think he told me about that one.
Yeah. I mean, I'm easy. I'm lazy. I'll take the easiest way out, but I'm not dumb. I'll take the way out. If I can walk flat ground for 75% of a pack out of elk on your back, I'm going to take the less pass or least resistance. And he just was wanting to be the macho guy and take it straight up the hill. It was shorter, but it was longer overall.
Well, and I would say what I've found is you have to accept people for who they are. So in life in general, but as well as hunt, Brian Call, very good example. Brian may from time to time get a little bossy when you're hunting. And at first, like I flipped out on him in Idaho. And at first I was taking it to heart, I guess you could say. Like it was starting to really bug me. But once I've gotten to know Brian, he means nothing by it. And so now as he's bossy, I just let it go in one ear and out the other. And I do whatever I want to do anyway, or we'll talk about it or whatever. Meaning I've kind of like, okay, that's the way he is. And I'm fine with that. It was a little rough a couple of times, and he's the same with me. Like, he's got to get used to me. I walk faster. I don't, you know what I mean? I don't still hunt very well. And you kind of have to just say, oh, well, it is what it is. And some people you can do that with and be completely fine. You know what I mean? As far as you can deal with that. Like, you don't wake up early.
Nope.
It's not anything I get riled up over. I just wake up a little earlier to get you up and plan on.
And you're good at it. You're good at
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a way to do it correctly, sort of. But, you know, you can't, if it bugged me that much that you didn't wake up early, it'd be a problem. But I just think it's funny. And eventually you'll get up and we'll go hunting, and I don't ever get bugged about it, where you have to deal with me being up all night. Yeah, and you got to just get
used to it. You should be used to that, though.
Yeah. And Kelly's fucking snoring. You got to get used to that, too.
Yeah. Kelly, he, that man snores for a skinny guy, especially. And I don't know if he's got a deviated septum. And for whatever reason, when I first met Kelly, I couldn't stop calling him Mark. And so now he's Kelly Mark when I talk to him. But he snores so loud that you could hear it, what would you say, probably 35, 40, 50 yards away?
Yeah, and he has sleep apnea. So all of a sudden he won't breathe. And then all of a sudden when he hits it, he fucking hits it.
Yeah, yeah, he can snore. Well, you snore a little too, so I got to deal with both. I don't snore, at least not very often. But the one time you guys were both snoring, and then there was a mouse running around. So between that, I didn't sleep at all.
You need to get those noise-canceling earphones that I have. That's what I have to put on every night so I can drown out his snoring. And
I have a heavy neck, all right?
Oh, Lord. So going back for, you know, hunts like in the last, not just with you and I, but for the last, I don't know, let's say 5 years, for example, you know, going through different, you know, hunts I've been on, you know, there's times when you help somebody out and they may not be somebody you would ever usually choose to hunt with, but they drew a good tag and you're just trying to help them, and you'll find out, you know, maybe they're not super, super fit. And that's something where you just kind of have to suck it up and say, well, we're walking slower today. Yeah, whatever, or the, it's weird where you can click and where you can't, because I hike a lot and you and I don't have any issues. You're just like, yeah, I'm going slower and I'm going that way. I'll see you at the end of the day. And I'm like, okay, great. And there's no issue.
Right.
Where there's
right.
other things that hunting partners just immediately grind. And what's amazing to me is people will still go hunting with those people. Right. And it's a fight for the entire time.
Do you think you have a better, you know, I know you do a lot of mostly, I would say most of your hunts are backpack hunting, but I know you do some car camping and car hunting and wall tent hunting. Do you find that you have more of an issue with the guys backpacking or more of the issue with the guys at wall tents or, you know, home base?
Man, that's a tough one. I mean, I would say usually for me, if I'm backpack hunting with a guy, I've already figured out pretty well if I'm going to get along with him or not. I think you can have much bigger issues while you're backpack hunting if you find a major flaw because you're stuck
right
5 miles in with a guy. The thing is you run into guys that can't shoot, guys that don't listen, right? Or their way is the only way. There's never any compromise, whether you're backpack hunting or whatever. Where right. The thing with backpack hunting, you have to work in such continuity together if you're hunting side by side. You have to have more or less the same game plan, the same ideologies on calling or glassing or stalking or whatever. So you have to have a much tighter knit, you know, if you're hunting side by side. Where if you're car camping and you're kind of spreading out each day, you're more just camping together. It's when you're hunting side by side that it becomes a huge problem. And you can lose friends over it. I mean, I know lots of friendships that have ended from hunting.
I do about 2 or 3 decent backpack hunts a year. And the one thing I notice with hunting partners I've had over the years is you find out who's negative really quick, quick on a backpacking trip. I don't know if it's just because you're stressed or you're packing the weight, or I really don't know why, but I never seem to have that. Even if I'm hunting with a guy every day from a wall tent, I don't have that. Seem to have that negativity brought up, but you definitely see character flaws, I guess, on a couple day backpack trip.
And I think it's like we experienced in the military. You find out who the Blue Falcon is when you take away sleep and food.
If you don't know what a Blue Falcon is, I'll explain it to you. It's a buddy fucker.
And you find those real quick. I mean, basically you take away food, you take away. That's one thing I got to hand it to Brian and you. Brian likes to sleep, and he likes to sleep a lot, like 8-10 hours a day.
Right.
But he doesn't ever really get crabby when he hasn't slept. He may not perform at his maximum, you know, physical level, or he may just be tired. In your case, when you're tired, you just don't talk. You know what I mean? Like you get quiet, but you don't get crabby. You just don't talk as much, where you'll get guys that start throwing hissy fits or everything like it's someone else's fault, right? Like we should have went this way and we would have killed it or whatever. When, what you've noticed with me, I don't really ever get in a, I'm just happy to be out there. I don't really ever get in a bad mood.
No, I've actually, out of all the people I've hunted with, you're probably the easiest guy to get along with. I mean, every time I suggest something, you're like, let's do it. All right, let's do it. The only time we kind of disagreed was on the moose deal when you wanted to climb up that hill with that rock. You and Kelly and I said, all right, I'll be up there in an hour.
I don't remember what happened.
Remember, we were on a bottom road, and you and Kelly wanted to walk up this hill with all these rocks, which I'm fine with, but I didn't really want to walk up there. I said, okay, go ahead, boys. I'll be up there in an hour. And then I walked back down the road and up the other side and came around. I don't know if you remember or not.
Oh, gotcha. I don't even remember, but yeah, no, it's pretty, if you got a guy that's super passive on the majority of stuff, Pinch is the same way. He'll voice his opinion from time to time. It's just with Pinch and I, he likes to walk too. So you don't really ever run into too many issues. The other big problem you can run into is the moral compass, like the, like frontal shots or far shots or whatever the case may be. It's not a good time when you've taken a frontal shot to find out your hunting partner is completely against frontal shots. Now, if it worked out, that's great, right? Animal's gone dead and, you know, proof's in the pudding. Take a frontal shot and you'll clip it in the shoulder. And next thing you know, the guy's telling you 7 which ways from Sunday on how much you suck and how that was a bad decision. And, you know, the world's going to end because of you. That can create a problem real quick. So you definitely want to make sure the moral compass is pointing the same direction.
Yeah. I mean, you are definitely on the same page there, because I'm not going to say I have a non-moral compass. All I'm going to say is I'm an opportunist and I'm a realist. If I spend all year to shoot at something and I get out there, I'm going to shoot it. And I know there's guys out there that, have questioned my shots when they've been with me, and I usually find them, but it's not always the most ideal shot, I guess. So there's definitely issues with partners there.
You're not too bad though, because when I wanted to shoot at things, you wouldn't let me.
Right. Yeah. Like I said, I'm a realist. If I don't think you can make the shot, or I don't think that the shot's a great presentable shot, I would tell you not to shoot.
Or it's not the right season, or you don't have a tag.
Yeah. Those are problems. Yeah, that's a serious moral compass problem. I just there's a few instances, which I've already gotten, you know, the one guy's already all pissed off at me, so I really don't care. And he's a cop. And, you know, it was one of those, you locked up for a second.
You're back.
Yeah, you're good now. It was one of those deals where it was, you know, ethical shooting distance compared to how much, you know, one guy shoots far, this other guy doesn't practice enough. And it kind of went back and, you know, conversations throughout the course of the hunt on what was right and what was wrong and so on and so forth. Well, you know, if you got a guy that's where you've donated every day of your life practicing to make sure your arrows are tuned and you can hit what you want. And then you got a guy that picks up his bow a week before season telling you how unethical you are for shooting at something at 65, 70 yards when he just picked up his bow after a year hiatus and all of a sudden thinks he's going to be proficient up to 40. Those things can cause major, major issues with hunting partners.
Right, especially once you start looking for animals and you don't agree on the tactics of why it was shot, because I've been in that situation before. I had a guy that shot a deer right before dark and hit it in the butt. He didn't want to go look for it that night. I wanted to go look for it that night. The next day we found it, and we don't have very big problems with coyotes, but a coyotes had eaten probably 3/4 of it, and if we'd have went that night, we'd have found it. We didn't. I never hunted with him again, so it does happen.
Yeah. No, it does for sure. And I mean, that's another thing, like blood trailing. People don't really think about even blood trailing can be a major crisis when it comes to hunting partners and how to go about blood trailing, pushing it, when to not push. You know, I'm of the opinion if it's a one lung or a muscle wound, push the animal. That's the only way. That's the only chance you're probably going to find it is get it to lose enough blood until it's weak. You get another shot at it, because it'll live off a muscle or a one lung hit. But when you look at something like a liver shot, how fast do you take off after it? A stomach wound. What do you do? You know, in the case, there's always, it's not as cut and dry as some people think. Like, oh, it's a stomach shot. We wait 24 hours. Where if you're in a high populated bear or coyote area, I mean, you might as well just say, hey, let's take the rack home, where you might want to risk a little bit more to find it so you can get the meat. You know, you may want to be a little sneaky or whatever, but dude, I've gotten the two crisis level blowouts from one lung shots with hunting partners, where I'm like, we need to run it down and we need to push it and get blood out of it and just start shooting arrows whenever you've got a chance. Like, you've already got it hit. Ethical shooting distance is out the window. You need to put more arrows in that animal. And he's like, no, we need to let it bed. It's bleeding really good. I'm like, yeah, one lung shots do bleed really good right up until the point you find a bed of coagulated blood and no animal. Then they don't bleed anymore and you can't find them because they can live off one lung. If you haven't covered the basis of those potential issues ahead of time, that can be a crisis later on.
I agree with that. And one thing you learn, we can get into this on another podcast, but one thing I learned with stick bow hunting is you get an arrow in them and you think it's iffy, you better go look for them. Because in North Idaho, and I do probably 80% of my hunting in North Idaho, it's always wet and that blood seems to wash away really quick and people don't grasp that when they come up here.
Well, and Brian and I had that this year on that one bull I wounded, and we didn't argue. He had just asked, he's very methodical, should I have just followed it? So right when I hit it, I didn't think twice. I followed it the entire way because I was in the middle of a blizzard, basically, you know, sleet and snow. And the only thing I could think of just with my experiences in dealing with that is if I don't keep eyes on this animal the entire time and keep the target acquired, I will never find where it went because it was snowing and sleet. And he was like, man, did you push it? And I'm like, dude, I really didn't have a choice whether I ended up pushing it or not, which I didn't because I ended up walking into it later. But was just the simple fact of blood. I wouldn't have found any just because of the snow and the rain.
Gotcha. Have you done much or any hunting, backpack or base camp hunting with females or not?
Oh, say that one more time. You broke up for a second.
Have you done any hunting with females, backpacking or, you know, ball tent hunting or anything like that?
No, not really.
Yeah,
the closest I came to that was hunting with you and your wife.
Yeah, it is a different way of thinking about stuff. Like, Tanya's always worried about peeing because she thinks there's a trail camera on every tree. So when we get out in the woods, she's always like, do you think I can pee here? Do you think I can pee here? And I'm like, yeah, yeah.
Hey, that's a valid concern.
And the other thing is Tanya just, she can, I always, you know, everybody I'm with, I don't really ask them, can you pack that? Can you not pack that? So I'm constantly asking her if she can or can't pack something. And I know that gets on her nerves. So.
Well, I feel like it, I obviously have drawbacks to my size and my strength and just the fact that I'm female and smaller. So I try to like think in my mind how I can, what I can do for the hunt that, you know, can alleviate some stressors in other places. Like, you know, whether it's like food preparation or, you know, just like other things that I know that Ryan's not going to plan for food preparation. And if he does, it's like, we're going to have 3 cans of chili.
All you need is chili and 3 cans or a pocket full of pretzels and you're good.
Yeah. So that's his mentality for food preparation. And I, after I started going, realized that it's way easier for me to prepare something ahead of time while I'm at home and then just like be able to, you know, reheat it on the stove. So in my mind, I'm thinking if I'm contributing in that way, then it helps alleviate some of the things that obviously he's not really worried about, but other people might be. And with, I just recently had a hip surgery. So, I haven't really been able to walk very well and, or bear any weight. So it's going to be interesting next year when I'm actually back to full capacity, what I'll, be able to pack. And, he's being modest, but we had a few blowouts, which you've experienced or you've witnessed when it came to like, him not packing things for me. And I'm pretty new to the fact that it's not second nature to what I need to have in my pack. And I don't always think about.
You're talking about when you brought tennis shoes?
Yes.
No sleeping bag.
No sleeping bag. Well, we were screwed because the first time we went, like he packed or he like, we went through our packs together and he's like, okay, this is what you're going to need. So we went through all of it. So then when we went, so it was fine. And then when we went on our trip with you and Brian and Casey, I looked at the weather and we weren't supposed to get rain and that was stupid of me, I know. But, then, so he said, do you have your hiking boots? And I thought that he meant that I would need them for hiking. And so I said, no, I'm just going to bring my tennis shoes. And he's like, are you sure you don't want to bring your hiking boots? And I'm like, no, I've got my Salomons. They have that good tread. And then we didn't ever talk about it again. And he always, the sleeping bags are kept in the garage. So when he pulls his down, he usually pulls mine down. So there was a couple miscommunications in that trip. And we had a little meltdown in front of everybody. And I think that scared Brian a little bit. Casey didn't seem too fazed by it.
What'd you say?
I thought it was awesome.
Well, you've seen us in action, so you weren't surprised by it. But I think I really scared Brian.
So now I ever lay it out on the floor and I say, show me your shoes.
Yeah.
Show me your bra. Show me your backpack. No, I don't do that. But you had the same kind of issue with another female lady and she forgot her sleeping pad, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And it was one of those deals like Amy and I are going to backpack a bunch this summer. And so I found the easiest way to do it is just pack for them all the primaries, right? Like the key essentials to stay alive and stay happy. And then the secondaries, I'll just let her handle, right? So if she wants to bring, I don't know, makeup or whatever, something that I would not normally think of, but I'll get the primaries in her pack.
Lady products.
And what's that?
The lady products.
Yeah, whatever that a female would need to bring would be a secondary, but like food, sleeping bag, all that stuff, make sure that she has it so that there's no major crises once you're 5 miles in. And, you know, I've helped people pack before that do the I know thing. And then you get to a point, in my case, where I just pop smoke and I walk away. I'm like, if you know, then you're good. You got it. I'm not helping. You
I never pack. Say that. I know I don't know.
Oh, that's
about
funny.
That. Well, about that.
She always says, why didn't you fucking pack that for me?
Well, in my mind, if he packed his stuff and then packed my stuff, the primary stuff like you speak of, I'm still spending way more time doing food prep and like mentally thinking through all the other things like glow in the dark paint for the straps on the wall tent and like trying to like think of every other thing. So in my mind, him packing my primary stuff really shouldn't be that much of a obligation to him.
That's crazy. Like you're talking about car camping. When it comes to backpack hunting, it's a completely different world because, I mean, you've basically, I mean, hypothetically, but realistically this happens. You are 5 to 7 miles in. Right. You fished, you went fishing, so you didn't unload your kit. You know, you're fishing, you've caught a few fish, and you're like, okay, let's get the fish back and set up camp. And then there's no bag.
Okay, now.
Well, it's not like you can say, oh, you know, let's, you know, warm up the tent a little bit more. What's that?
I was just going to say, now.
You dropped out on us for
a
second.
Yeah, you dropped out. But so with backpack hunting, we did one of those trips also with you, the Spring Bear, right?
Yeah, me, you, Billy, and Lane, and Hurt.
And Kelly.
Oh, and Mark. Kelly.
And Kelly. So that, I felt like we were better prepared for that only because we really had to be so meticulous with weight and what we were packing, and he did most of the packing.
Meticulous? For me. Fuck, I had all the weight. There was no meticulous. It was just fucking put it in the backpack.
That's the thing. But then our kid ate all of our food like one day, so that kind of like threw a wrench in that. But I felt like I was definitely better prepared. That, I mean, you almost get lazy with car camping because you know that you can figure out another way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I'm overly anal retentive on everything, but yeah, you can definitely get more relaxed on the car camping thing. But when I dropped out talking about, you know, you're 7 miles in and you all of a sudden find there's no bag. One, it can be a health or a life and limb issue, right? Like, okay, so now,
or kidney stones.
The kidney stone thing was rough. You can be 7 miles in and it's an hour before dark or a half hour dark or right at dark and you're setting up camp. You find out there's no bag. You're either going to build a fire and have a very sleepless night, or you're going to have a 7 mile walk out in the dark and not go camping. So I'm pretty, when I help people pack now, I mean, I do all the primaries and I watch them go in the bag, and then I watch for the secondaries just because, like my daughter, she was loading secondaries in like it was her job. I'm like, Haley, you have to carry that in, honey. Oh, I'll be fine. I'm like, no, you don't need that. You know, she was throwing books in and all kinds of stuff. And she didn't know. She's only 14, right? So, but her primaries, we got in there and she was good to go. And she didn't think she would eat as much as she would. And I was explaining to her burning more calories. And she's like, Lane, she was eating everything.
Yeah.
She ate my food.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest problem on that particular trip was the first time we really had Lane deeper in the woods, and that little bastard ate everything.
Well, I think what we figured out later was his plan was he figured out his friends were having a party like in a day. So he figured out pretty quick, because he's smart, that if he ate everybody's food, that we'd have to go home. So it worked out for him that he master manipulated that.
Yeah. And that was a good trip. I mean, as far as like, you know, going over hunting partners, I'd never hunted with Billy. I've never backpack hunted with any of you guys, really. Well, Ryan and I backpack hunted, but, you know, we were in, I don't know, how many miles did we hike?
Well, since we couldn't get to the trailhead, we were at least in 4.5, maybe 5, 6.
Yeah, and I was thinking 5.5, because where we were wanting to go was 7, and right, the snow stopped us. But we went in, the three of us, me, Billy, and Kelly Mark, ahead of time. You guys came in the next day. But that night before, we saw that bear, and Billy's ready to roll. And
Goonies never say die.
I'm like, yeah, dude, I'm not going over there tonight. And I'm like, that makes no sense at all. It'll be back in the morning. And which he was cool about, but he was ready to go. But like Billy never, you know, complained. We shot that bear in a decent hole. And I found that Billy, even though has the body of a very defined and toned body, he is not a great hiker, specifically uphill. Now when we went downhill, he said that was his jam. He was very good at hiking downhill.
Right.
but when we were going uphill, it wasn't like he whined or complained. He didn't bitch, moan, nothing. He just said, I'm not going to keep up with you, so I'm not going to try. And I was like, all right, cool, man. I'll meet you at the trail. And we went up. But I've hunted with other people where, oh, my pack's not right, my boots are loose, my whatever, you know, rather than just saying I suck and I can't hike that fast, which is completely acceptable. It's got every problem in the world other than, well, I just am not a great hiker. Because there's other times, there's certain things that I'm not great at. And you're the same way. I just throw it out there like, yeah, I suck at this. So don't expect me to be good at it. And you won't be let down.
Right. I think that's the best way. I'm sure you have been in the situation. I hunted with a guy bear hunting, and he didn't have a lot of knowledge on hunting. And we ended up shooting a bear, and he wanted to do the old pole trick with the bear in the middle. And I
never works.
No. And we were up where we hunted, where you hunt bears. Actually, where you and Brian went hunting elk. We were still on that lower road where he shot it.
Yeah. You're going to have to explain what that means. Cause I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Well, you know, you have two guys and a pole in the middle, and you have the bear hanging over the pole.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So we shot up on that road. We couldn't cross the actual river because it was spring and it was too high. So we had to go back down and, you know, bypass the river to get back to the land, to the road. And, I kept telling him he didn't want to do it, and we put it on there. And, you know, if you guys have ever tried it, but you start walking, you start vibrating, it starts hopping.
It's swinging too.
Yep,
yeah.
Yep. And it starts swinging back and forth, starts sliding towards the downhill guy, and it's just stupid. And I never hunted with him again, basically, because I said, we cut it up now, skin it out. We'll be back in about 3 hours. If we do it with the pole, we're going to be here all day. And he wouldn't have it. So I don't know if he's still using that technique or not, but he's not doing it with me.
Well, and that's the other thing you talk about, like breaking the animal down, you know, like that can have issues with that. Everybody's got their own, you know, some guys act like they actually know what they're doing and dive in, and then you're watching them like, what the hell are you doing? And some guys you're a hack, or at least a self-admitted hack. I'm mid-road. Brian's super anal retentive. Like, he's way, way cleaner than I've ever even seen.
I can see that from Brian. Yeah, for sure. I can see that.
Yeah.
Cause I'm cutting off chunks and laying it on the log. And, he's like, so what do you do? I'm like, I just leave it there if there's no bugs, and let it kind of drain and air out, and then throw it in the bag. And he was like, you get debris on it? I'm like, not really. And he said, like, they have one guy cutting, and he's handing it to a guy, and that guy takes it and puts it in the bag. And I'm like, yeah, I don't put that much effort to it, dude. I'm like, I'll lay a piece of Tyvek out and throw a bunch of stuff on it. But, when I shot that bear with you up the road, different story. I was by myself, and I was a dipshit, and I didn't bring any game bags. I just wrapped all the meat in the hide and stuffed it in my pack, and then waddled my way out. But, like, you know, in the case of, like, if you were with me with that bear, for example, nothing would have happened any different, other than I might have cut a little more than you because you're a self-admitted hacker, and I would have said probably, okay, I'll do the cutting if you want to do the stuffing.
Right.
Or if you want to, you know, lay it out for me or whatever. And once you get a good hunting partner, you got a rhythm. You know what I mean? Where people are, you can beat this horse to death. But I have seen so many people, like, the worst thing you can have is three guys, all of them on different ends of the spectrum, taking apart an animal. Because it's like the New York Taxi Drivers Union arguing about directions. It is... What are you doing? Why are you doing that? You should do this. And it's like, you know, at the end of the day, it's meat in a bag that goes in your freezer. There's only so many ways you can do it. You can screw it up, but I don't get too wrapped up in it. If a guy wants to do it a different way, I don't get too Twitter pated over it.
I mean, either. I've shot elk been with people that killed elk, or I shot the elk on several different hunts, and I'm pretty much whatever they want to do. If I cut it up, I can clean that son of a bitch at home. It's getting cut up as fast as possible. I take all the meat I can get. Don't get me wrong. I don't leave any meat, but you don't know what the hell that piece is. If you want a rump roast, you don't know what the hell you're getting when you pull it out of the bag. Because 90% of our stuff, our kids consume hamburger like it's free. So 90% of the elk that I shoot is going to be hamburger. So if somebody kills with me, I'll say, hey, if you want to make steaks or you want to make roasts, you do the cuts.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm a little more methodical on that because I take apart the actual chunks. I follow the different lines or whatever. But I mean, I think with Brian, it sounds like they do. Of course, he also said it takes longer. I can do an elk by myself in about an hour and a half, hour, give or take, depending on the terrain and everything else. A lot of people don't believe that, but once you get a system down, it's fairly simple. But I've seen the most skilled guy that I know can do an elk in an hour and a half have the issue of having another guy with him where he's arguing where it takes 3 hours because everything was a freaking debate with every cut he made because they went back and forth. So,
right. Right. And I in North Idaho anyways, it's you never hunt, you never kill an elk. Speaking of elk, you never kill an elk on a flat area. So you're always fighting gravity.
Yeah, you'd have to shoot one on the road. That's about it.
Yeah, I've never really had the – I did shoot one in the river, and the only thing that sucked about that was it was in the river. I had to drag him out, got him out whole. But besides that particular elk, every one I've had to tie off and tie to brush and tie multiple times because it rips the root right out of the ground. And I don't have time to piss around with it and make it look pretty. I just want the son of a bitch broke down so I can get out of there.
Yeah, in North Idaho, it's got its own issues. There's a few you know, trips we Brian and I had made on the way out. And I was thinking if I had to carry an elk out and I was going the way that I chose, this would be an ugly situation, you know, just blind shooting at the dark, trying to get back to the base camp after we stayed a couple nights, you know, thinking if we had an elk on our back right now, it would be a problem just because the terrain in North Idaho is horrible.
Right. Do you find it's easier to break them down because it's more no underbrush in Colorado or just
everything as far as that goes is easier in Colorado, without a doubt. We're Colorado, each area, which, you know, I guess blessed to hunt multiple different states and parts of the world. And Colorado is easy underbrush. There's no underbrush. You can see for miles. But the problem with Colorado isn't even, I mean, it's steep, but North Idaho is steep. There's just no oxygen here. That is the equalizer for everything. There is just no oxygen. And that's the only problem you run into here is, you know, breaking one apart. There's not an overly large amount of bugs, so that's not an issue. Heat, yeah, it can be hot here, but you generally have like a corridor or a creek or whatever you can hide it. It's just altitude. It just, Brian had a hell of a time.
Have you ever gotten in any kind of arguments with people coming out there that can't physically breathe and can't keep up for, you know, they're fit hunters and they're coming from, you know, lower elevation or just not fit enough to make that oxygen change, elevation change. Yeah,
I was actually just talking to Amy about this. Not that I personally hunted with. Dale Pearson came out and he talked about the oxygen. He wasn't as fast as we were. But he didn't give up. He kept going, you know what I mean? But it was altitude. And it's not like he did a bad job. It was a shocker for him when he first got there, the altitude, packing in a 65-pound pack. Gotcha. But what I do, and I haven't gotten into blowouts with guys, but you know how many PMs and emails I get with questions.
Right.
The guys that usually come off and tell me, I played college sports, I'm very fit. And I say, when did you graduate? And they'll say 98. And I'll say, then that doesn't mean shit. You need to prep, right? You need to get ready. Not that there's anything wrong with those people, or they may or may not be fit. It's just altitude is the equalizer of all equalizer. It is a difficult thing. And you can get altitude. Guys don't understand. If you're prone to altitude sickness, you want to cut your head off. Your head hurts so bad. The only way to fix that is drop altitude.
Have you ever had anybody quit on you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, multiple times. Not as a hunting partner, but when I've helped guys. You know what I mean? Where I didn't have a tag, but I was helping somebody. Yeah, I've had guys lay up bad. Well, that one goat hunt I went on a few years ago, I packed out, no BS, the goat meat, the cape, the weapon, the spotter, all of my gear and all of his gear for 5.5 miles in one trip. And when we got down, which I don't know what weight that was, but when we finally, you know, we were at about 12.9 when we shot the goat, I think you're at like 92 by the time you get to the trailhead. The guy was bitching about his feet when we got to the truck, and I carried everything but his rain jacket because he was carrying it. And I was thinking, and he didn't lay up completely, but he's like, I can't make it. I'm like, well, there is no button to push like on alone. No one's coming. Like, you don't have a choice. He's like, well, I could probably make it. Can we come back tomorrow? And I'm like, well, I ain't coming back tomorrow. I'll just carry all your crap. And I knew he wouldn't go back, and I didn't want to leave any meat or anything.
Yeah, that sucks. That's what you're going to talk about.
Hmm. Oh, I was just going to ask if it makes more sense for you when you're planning a backpack hunt, just to each, like if you're going just with one other person, to both worry about your own stuff, or if it makes sense for like one of you guys to bring a certain item for both of you, you know,
it depends on the partner. Because you know, if you start divvying stuff up, like stoves, water purifiers, primaries, or what I call primary, it's all fine and good if you're going to stick together through hell or high water. But if you're the kind of guy that's like, I'm going off on my own for a day or two, someone's getting the shitty end of that stick because they're not going to have something they need. Mm-hmm. I personally try to bring my own kit. Now, I'm not a super ultra. I have super ultra light gear. But if I'm like, oh, I'm going to save 11 ounces if we split up a stove, I'm probably not splitting up the stove. I'm going to pack my own. I've just been screwed too many times. But if you're trying to go lightweight, you're sticking together through thick and thin. Yeah. Split your gear up, but that never happens when I go hunting. We generally end up splitting up at some points or somehow or some reason.
Me and you are a lot alike on that. I don't, just like with our glass, I've heard you tell people, yeah, you really should have brought a spotter because you don't have one now. And I do. I don't like to use other people's shit. I'm an independent hunter. I like to hunt by myself a lot. So I like bringing all of my own stuff, even if it means my fat ass has got to carry a little more. I don't like depending on other people.
Well, that's where it's going to be different, though, if you're hunting with your spouse at first. I mean, eventually we may get to the point where, you know, I go in one direction and you go into another. But knowing how I navigate a map and just my general sense of direction, that probably will never happen. So I'll die.
Yeah, if when Amy and I go, I'm going to take the stove and the pure, you know, I'm going to take everything because we're not splitting up. And that brings up a good point, is safety, right? Like, I'm actually pretty happy that she wants to go backpack all over Hell's Half Acre, but she doesn't want to hunt. Not because I don't want her there, but because we do such dumb shit. I don't want her life to be in jeopardy ever because of the stupid. I talk men into doing stupid things that later on are mad at me. They were so stupid. And so the last thing, or push the limits physically, like which Ryan has seen with me, there is no mountain too far. I will go wherever, whenever, and hitchhike back. Well, do you really want to drag your spouse through that? Like, how's that going to sound on your 50th wedding? And, you know, there's going to be like, remember that one time, you asshole, that you did this and we got stuck out. So you have to take into, you know, pretty realistic. Yeah, you have to be realistic to the capabilities of your partner. And if it's a guy, there's always the man card, right? You know, like, right, toughen up. But if that shit doesn't work with a spouse or a kid, I mean, you're going to have to cater to their physical ability. And also, you want to get along at the end of it. And dragging someone along through for a 3 to 5 mile trek after you've hiked in 5 through snow and rain to go shoot a 4-legged animal that you may or may not even get a shot at and try and sell that to someone is difficult. So that can be a problem.
No, I think that's a really good point. We're talking a lot about going hunting with your spouse and the obstacles that has, but really it's going to be about the same as if you are taking one of your children with you. You're going to have to, one is going to have to be the primary person because, you know, they have all the experience and they have the strength. And so I think that's going to pretty much equate to hunting with your spouse is hunting with one of your kids or something like that. You're going to have the same sort of protective instincts, I would think. I mean, some people might not, but it's just a whole different ballgame than just hunting with another person, I think.
Well, it's like, not to get into the women in combat thing, but like, I don't care what anybody says. If you have a woman beside you that takes a round somewhere and a man, we're men and we're humans and you're always going to take care of the woman for, in my opinion, unless she's just an epic pain in your ass the last 6 months, maybe not, but everything being equal, you're probably going to take care of the woman first. And that same thing, like if you've waited an entire, and I'm not saying don't hunt with your spouse, but you've waited an entire year and you spent $650 on a tag and you've driven for 9 hours to get there. How do you think that's going to sound to a husband and wife fighting, which I've seen you guys go at it? Should we go that mile and a half and gain that 1,000 feet to go after that deer? You're going to have to sell that to your wife first, or the wife's going to sell it to the husband.
Right.
And then the wife hasn't figured out yet. You've just added 3 miles to your day. If you kill it, you got to get it back. Mm-hmm. Those are all things that can be huge problems. I mean, whether it be hunting partners that are guys or the spouse or your kid or whatever. So,
yeah. I agree with the spouse and the kid thing. It could be definitely be baby steps. You might not want to jump them right into a 7 mile hike in.
Yeah. Well, no. I'm not going to pretend to be a huntress, or that's not my ultimate goal. I went into this knowing that there was going to be some hunts that he's going to go on that I have no desire to go on. I'm not going to pretend to be this rock star, because I'm going to fully admit that I'm a puss, and I don't want to go sheep hunting or goat hunting, and I'm deathly afraid of heights, and I don't want to ruin it for him. He just went to Alaska. I have no desire to go to Alaska. So I just feel like there's some hunts that I do want to go on and be a part of, but I'm not gonna, you know, suffer, make both of us suffer.
What about the shit foo thing?
Well, I felt like I was
sit foo.
It was sit foo.
What's sit foo mean, Tanya?
Suck it the fuck up. And I felt like I was. I just know going into something, if that's not something I'm interested in, I'm not going to do it. I mean, if I'm in a hunt that I agreed to and everything else, yeah, I think he'll admit to the fact I'm not going to say shit, and you won't hear me complain during the hunt, but I'm not going to. I see some people that, you know, that are girls that are so determined to be a part of the group and be tough and, you know, prove the guys wrong, that they can hang. Yeah, I'm not that person. I'm not going to pull that line of bullshit. I'm just not. I'm going to admit that there's shit that I want, like showers. I made them for the elk hunt, help me, you know, hook up a shower, because I wasn't willing to go 5 days without one, and I didn't have any apologies. Luckily, Kelly, who's been married for a really long time, just knew that was like the one thing I was not going to go without. And he has a wife and he gets all that. So he didn't bitch or moan and help me figure it out. And it worked out pretty well. And he used it too. So I'm just saying that I think there's concessions. If you're going to go all, I think you have to know what their expectations are with a hunt.
Yeah, you definitely, one thing I found, whether it's a weaker, when I say weaker, meaning maybe a hunting partner not as fit or a spouse, or you need to be ready. It's a sacrifice, right? Like, I don't know how many times I've ended up with a second pack attached to my pack, but it's a lot. So if you're wanting that person in your, you know, to hunt with you, in the case of like with Kaylee, you know, I helped Kaylee out with, you know, packing some stuff or whatever, but believe it or not, I've had multiple backpacks from men on my back, to finish the day, just to make sure to keep hunting. And, not my close hunting partners, but when I've helped guys and stuff like that, just to keep going. And here, I definitely would say, if you're expecting your spouse to be 100% on par with your hunting partner, is probably not going to happen. Especially, you're just getting into it, Tanya. I mean, you started hunting a couple of years ago, but, you know, backpack hunting, if you came from backpacking to backpack hunting, it's a whole different story. But, you know, if you haven't done any of it, it's pretty intimidating just to start backpacking in. You did good on the one we went on, though.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if I'm committing to it, I'm going to sit foo. But, I mean, when he talks about certain hunts, like, oh, I want to go, well, like when you wanted to go to Alaska, I'm like, you have my blessing, knock yourself out, have a good time. I'm not interested in that. And I feel like that's really important, for a girl or a spouse to really, you know, with their abilities, try to really decide whether that's something they want to do, because it really sucks for everybody if they want to just be tough and be cool and go on a hunt to prove themselves and never wanted to do it to begin with.
Yeah, no, that's true. For sure. So just because we don't want this to drag on forever, how many hunts are you two going on in 17 potentially together?
Together? Any? At least three.
Oh, my Lanta.
Two elk hunts and at least one deer hunt.
Well,
am I attending?
You were going to be there, Aaron.
What's up?
Am I attending any of those?
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Four. If you're coming bear hunting, we'll be four.
Four. All right.
But
that's
no,
funny.
No, this is starting to run on long, so we'll get off here. We appreciate you coming on, Aaron. If you can't find Aaron Snyder, you're not fucking looking hard enough. So you don't have to tell people how to find you, I guess. But we'll have you on again, and I really appreciate it, and I'm sure Tandy does too. You appreciate it?
Yes, I appreciate it. I appreciate every time Aaron is willing to help me, which seems like there's been a lot of times. So I definitely owe him and have to stock up on Girl Scout cookies by the case every time he comes to hunt at our house. So
I know it's a heyday when I show up at your house. It's like cheat week.
It's Aaron carb loading week.
Oh, yeah. So. I know. Although I will say, so Ryan, I can't tell the entire story, but Tanya ended up with photos for me coming out of the river naked in the winter, and Ryan took them. And so I started making fun of her about something, and I ended up with a – man, what did it say? This guy takes cold showers?
I think it said – well, you started it by sending me a picture when I was tangled up in my back rhino harness.
You were giving an ugly glare back.
Oh, yeah.
It said, this competes. I was going to post the other day, you tangled up in your harness, and you threw back at me. I have pictures of you coming out of the river. And I said, well, all men know about shrinkage. That's not a problem. But I didn't post the photo because I was like, there's going to be a naked photo of me on Facebook in 5 minutes because you're crazy.
Yeah. No, so you started it. And, of course, that I'm not one to just let things go because I'm a woman. So Ryan had that one picture of you coming out of the river. And it's not that close up. So it wasn't like, you know, totally checking your junk out or anything.
You're fine, dude. You're fine.
It's fine. Yeah. It's okay. It's shrinkage, like you said. And posted it back like, this guy likes to swim in cold rivers. So I'm not sure if that was very nice.
I think Amy said I look cute. I don't know if that's good or not.
You look cute?
Did she say you look cute or it looks cute?
I don't know. Did you say I looked cute or my weenus? I don't know. I'm going to say me.
Yeah,
dude,
let's go with that.
Dude, you can take a picture of me this year coming out of there. They'll like, holy fuck, Sasquatch is coming out of the water. Why does Sasquatch have such a little dick?
And you wonder why I'm freaked out about trail cameras in the woods. Like, I don't want that shit to end up on the internet.
I jumped in that river, I remember, and I was like, I couldn't breathe. It was so cold. Good Lord.
That's pure fucking snow, dude. That is cold shit.
Yeah, it was bad. Well, we were watching Alone yesterday, and they said the temperature was 41 degrees, and the chick jumped in, and I said, that's a lie. She's talking normal, nothing. And I was like, I jumped in 48 degree temp, and I mean – your muscles lock up initially when you get in and you can't breathe. You can't talk hardly.
No, it just sucks the air right out of your lungs.
Yeah, no, I remember because I was thanking the Lord that the river wasn't too swift because I could barely move my arms and legs. It was so cold. I had trouble just walking when I got out. I felt better, but man, it was painful for a little bit.
Well, the good thing you got that big paddle downstairs to fucking keep you stable.
Ballast.
No, it was shrink. It was shrank up.
Oh, so no, not when he first jumped in. He had ballast with that baby.
Sure. Then he started to lose his footing because it shrunk up.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it.
Too far? Is this too far?
No.
We might have to edit some of this out.
I crossed that river 17 times this fall. It was just a lot warmer.
Shit, yeah, a lot shallower.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right. Well,
all right,
I should eat some dinner here. All right, cool.
All right.
Well, thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks a lot. Have you back.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
All right, thanks for listening. This is just a reminder. Get your reviews in on iTunes, Stitcher, and Podbean for your chance to win a Kafaru 14er. We'll probably, like I said, give that away in the next 6 weeks, and the odds are really good. You can also always get 20% off at mountainops.com using the code FATKID. We'd appreciate that also. You can find us at AveryAdventures.com and on YouTube at Avery Adventures. And pretty much all of our podcasts are now on video. There is a few exceptions because I am a video dummy. So anyways, thanks for listening and see you next time.